Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Jimmy Smits returns to NBC as a legal eagle Monday night, and this time, rather than crusade for justice out of L.A., he's doing so from Memphis, Tennessee on Bluff City Law. Creator and executive producer Gene Gord Harris joins me next in an internet radio exclusive. In our second half hour, we'll catch up with prolific game and competition show director Ivan Nadinsky. When he's not directing programs from Songland to Hollywood Game Night, and to tell the truth, Mr. D is cooking up a pair of programming ventures that may be aimed soon at your smart TV set or connected device. Also ahead, Seton Sparks' new TV direction, Glow Ends at 4, our classic trivia question, and a few Emmy Award predictions. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, the leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information that will transform the way you hear the world. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want. Get 3 free books when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in this hour. Thank you very much for joining us on this Friday afternoon to the program All About Television. We appreciate you wrapping up the week with us. It is absolutely gorgeous here in New York, 70 degrees at the top of the hour, and it looks like we're going to wrap up summer and bring in fall on a very sunny and wonderful note. We have some terrific guests coming your way in the hour ahead, and we invite you to be part of the program. It's so simple to be interactive with us. Just pick up the phone and dial in with this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number's good anyway. You're catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker. We got a chat room going. Some people already in the room, happy to say. Simon Apple 04 is the name of the room, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And while the program is on the air, you can connect others by using Facebook Timeline. Click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk Radio or Speaker screen. Follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. Gene George Harris from Bluff City Law joins us live from Los Angeles after these news notes. One more season and out for Glow, Netflix's popular comedy based on the 1980s all-female professional wrestling league that was a TV favorite in that decade. Season 4 will debut next year, consisting of 10 episodes. Jenji Kohan will be back as an executive producer, with co-creators Liz Blahive and Carly Metz returning as showrunners and lead writers. So far, Glow has earned 3 Emmy Awards and 15 Emmy nominations. Seton Sparks, the popular crowdfunding site for movies and television series, is now a 24/7 programming service. Some of the network's most popular content is playing on Roku, with other smart TV device and set distribution a strong prospect. Roku viewers are rating the service 3.9 out of 5 stars. Documentaries and short subjects also are in Seton Sparks format. Now some quickies. Ryan Seacrest will be back as the host of American Idol on ABC next year. Travel Channel will hunt for ghosts in Salem, Massachusetts, home of the notorious witch trials during the late 17th century. The hunt happens live in prime time October 4th. Fox begins a 6th round of episodes October 29th on E! And on a sad note, Suzanne Wang, the unscripted and entertainment program reporter who became the long-running host of House Hunters on Home and Garden Television, died earlier this week, but the announcement came this afternoon. Cause of death, complications from recurrence of breast cancer 11 months ago. Wang was 57. And that is news notes for today. In the mid-1980s, Stephen Boschko hooked up with a legal eagle named Terry Louise Fisher and put together a remarkable series called L.A. Law, which ran on NBC for nearly a decade. Many of the people who were on that show became stars, and one of the biggest was Jimmy Smith, who played the lawyer Cifuentes. He went on, of course, to the shows with NYPD Blue and a remarkable turn as a presidential candidate on the West Wing. And now for the first time in a long while, he is back on NBC this Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time in the new legal drama, this time set in Memphis, Tennessee, Bluff City Law. And joining us live from Los Angeles in an internet radio exclusive, the creator and executive producer, Gene George Harris. Gene, welcome in.
Thank you very much, Simon. How are you?
Very, very fine, thank you. How's it going a few days before your series premieres?
You know, working really hard. It always, this is an anxious time, I think, for everybody. You've put so much blood, sweat, and tears into the show, and, you know, you just hope that it finds its audience.
Well, with Jimmy Smith aboard as the star, it's a great shot.
Yeah, you know, he's one of those legends. You know, he's, I mean, you mentioned some of his credits. I remember him from L.A. Law. I thought what he did on NYPD Blue as Bobby Simone was about as good a performance as I've ever seen on TV. I still remember when he died. And when, you know, we first heard he was interested in this show, you know, you sort of, you run, you don't walk when you hear Jimmy Smits might be interested in playing one of your characters. And, you know, he's everything you'd hope he would be. He's an incredibly talented actor. He's also just a really kind person. He's a leader on the set, and it's just been a thrill. I mean, it's really been an honor to write for him.
Yeah, and you're so right. That final episode, his death episode, and he was one of the highlights of that series, but that season, and certainly in a number of years. How did you get to write Bluff City Law? What inspired you to do it?
You know, about a little over a year, year and a half ago at this time, I was sitting around with one of my good friends and co-creator of the show, Michael Aguilar, and we were sort of reminiscing on our favorite network television series. And, you know, no surprise, West Wing, NYPD Blue, L.A. Law, you know, sort of The Practice, the David Kelly kind of dramas. And, you know, we noticed there wasn't one on television. You know, there wasn't really a legal show that took on issues, a legal show that was, you know, I don't want to say unabashedly positive, but at least was aspirational and inspirational. And it just, you know, I think the best thing you can do as a creative person is to write and create the kind of thing you'd want to see, especially in television, where in success, you know, that it may become a marriage that lasts many, many years. And so we just set about, you know, building a story about, you know, people who believe in our system and people who fight for our system. And then the idea being they're so incredibly talented and skilled when it comes to doing that. But, you know, as individuals, guess what? They're flawed just like the rest of us.
How long did it take for you and your colleagues to work the show through to where you thought it would be good to pitch it to NBC or wherever you did before? If NBC wasn't the first to pitch it elsewhere, and
yeah.
Also why Memphis as the home base?
Well, I'll answer about the process. You know, I think we came up with the original sketch of the idea, which was really nothing more than family law firm, and we knew we wanted to set it somewhere in the South, and Memphis actually pretty early on, and I'll speak more to that in a second. And then, you know, ran that arena by Universal Television, which is where my company has its deal, and they were excited about it. And then, so you spend a couple of months honing it, and in our case, because we have the relationship with Universal and with NBC, you know, you can pick their brain. You can say, hey, we're thinking a little more of this. At one point, Jimmy's character was actually dead. The original conception of the show involved his daughter taking over in his death, and you know, we spent a few weeks on that and noticed we couldn't get anywhere. And suddenly one of us said, well, maybe it's because, you know, the most interesting character is dead. So we brought him to life. And then, you know, you pitch it in September. You spend October through December writing it, basically. They decide in January if they want to make it as a pilot. And then you race to produce the pilot, which is this crazy mad dash. You make it in March. You edit it in April. And they decide in May, and basically I think for us they decided around the 10th of May, and then you're hiring writers and you're, you know, off to the races trying to get the season going before you actually start production. So, you know, since we're on then in the fall, we started production, you know, fairly early in July. You know, and why Memphis? Well, you know, I'd seen New York, I'd seen Chicago, I'd seen L.A., so, you know, we wanted somewhere fresh. It's, you know, those three cities don't have a lock on human beings trying to make the world a better place or who are interesting. And when we dug deeper, Memphis has this great history. Memphis is a social justice city. You know, Memphis is a, you know, it's it has a past. You know, it's where Martin Luther King was assassinated. It's also where the the most important civil rights attorneys of the South come from. And it's, you know, it's a big city that feels like a small town. It's a really optimistic place. It's visually stunning. And it just, you know, I was there a few weeks ago, and I said to the Memphis audience that when we talk about the show, we say it's about people who love each other and who fight a lot but believe the world can be a better place and aren't going to give up. And in a way, that's kind of what the spirit of that city is like. And so, you know, it's been a wonderful marriage so far, and we've been lucky enough to get to film there, which is rare.
We're speaking with Dean Dardaris. He is the creator and executive producer of NBC's new legal drama starring Jenny Smith. It's called Bluff City Law, and it premieres this coming Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time from Memphis, Tennessee, where the show is based. And Dean joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York, 36 degrees at the top of the hour. Delighted to have you with us on this Friday afternoon. If you have a question or comment for our guests, make the call go 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04. But, you know, a lot of people have popped in the room in the last few moments. Three episodes coming your way next week. Monday, a very special one. Thursday, we'll tell you about shortly, and on Friday. And coming up on Monday, one of the longest-running programs on public television has just become a 24/7 programming service, the American Health Journal. It's available now on Roku. It will be coming on other smart TV devices and smart sets in the next few months. We'll have the executive director of the organization that makes this program go, Roland Perez. He'll be with us live as our lead guest. That's Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And next Friday, among our guests, we will have the general manager of BET Plus that premiered yesterday, Devin Griffin. It's Devin Griffin of BET Plus. He will be live with us. That's next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Dean, when you decided to have the show produced in Memphis, how welcome were the people there in terms of having you?
You know, they were incredible. You know, I mean, what's interesting is there are cities where you film a lot, and after a while, those cities tend to get, I don't want to say jaded, but, you know, they're used to you, and they become they make it a little more difficult to film in places that you might want to film, like prisons or hospitals. Memphis was the exact opposite. You know, we scouted there. We met with both mayors. We met with Lynn Sittler, who's the local film commissioner, and they just, I mean, they rolled out the red carpet. They made us feel welcome. They literally brought us into their homes. And it's, you know, it makes it a little that much easier to go to work every day when you feel like the people are happy to have you. Because, you know, let's be honest, producing a TV show is a little bit, there's a little bit of a circus to it. You know, you're rolling in with a bunch of trucks. We can be annoying at times. It's annoying to shut down streets. We are an inconvenience. But Memphis embraced us with open arms, and I think it's just at this point it's a mutual love affair.
So tell us more about the show and how the dynamic of both dealing with topics through the law and also dealing with the father-daughter relationship that Jimmy Smith is involved with, how that all plays in.
Yeah, well, you know, I think at its core, they're really the show is trying to do two things, really, right? And the first is looking at issues through the prism of the law. You know, I feel like we live in a time right now where we seem to be emphasizing our differences, and we like to argue. But the truth is, our legal system is a form where we can come together and settle our differences. It's also where we define what's right and wrong. And great legal dramas in the past that I loved would present both sides of interesting issues every week. And, you know, then that's something we're really excited to do. And sometimes it's, you know, David and Goliath product liability cases, but other times it's sort of more interesting issues like, is it right or wrong for a teacher at a religious school to be fired for violating a particular tenet of that religion? You know, like how free is free speech? Is there a place where free speech is, you know, is being protected to the point of being harmful for our society? So on the one hand, we're a show that is asking big questions and arguing, you know, what's best and what's right. The flip side of that is, who do we want to be the people doing that arguing? Yeah, and we decided pretty early on that we wanted, you know, the character that Jimmy plays to be someone who's been fighting this fight for 40 years and who raised a daughter who has his same passion, his same intelligence, his same commitment, but who is very different from him, and at least in part, their relationship is strained by the fact that although this man is a legal eagle, as you said earlier, and is considered a great man, he's a very human man, and you know, wasn't always perfect in his marriage. And so she grew up in the shadow of this great man who she knew was flawed. And you know, their relationship was strained. And the series begins with the death of his wife, her mother, you know, and it's one of those moments where you realize we either repair our relationship or maybe we never get that chance. And so for us, it's fun because you still have all of the drama of why these two characters clashed, but now you have a reason to bring them back together and take on, you know, different issues every week.
Mm-hmm. Did Jimmy see this as a way to come full circle with what he did on L.A. Law?
You know, it's interesting. People have asked him that. I don't think Jimmy actually sort of thinks in those terms. Jimmy reads scripts and gets excited about characters, and in particular gets excited about characters who are not perfect. You know, Jimmy himself has so much natural charm and poise, and he makes things look effortless. You know, and I think at times you sort of want to – you think, oh, well, we always want him to play a perfect person. But Jimmy's really interested in digging in and getting underneath people. He's interested in the flaws. He's interested in the unvarnished relationships. And in fact, when he read the original pilot, his one note was, I want my relationship with my daughter to be even more strained. I want to say mean things to her. I want to have, you know, I want to be imperfect. So I think, you know, he was aware that from a sort of larger career story standpoint, this is him going back to something he's done very successfully before. But I think, frankly, he wasn't doing it saying, hey, I want to do another legal show. He read a character that he liked, and he read a relationship that he liked, and he came to us and basically said, you know, here's why I would be interested in doing your show. Not for any of those other reasons. I want to do relationship, a story between a father-daughter, and I want to do, you know, a story that's positive about trying to make the world a better place, even if we fail half the time.
Yeah. Let's talk about the daughter for a moment. Who plays her, and how long did it take for her to develop her character?
So the daughter's played by Caitlin McGee. She's an actress who's actually been on the verge for a handful of years, and she auditioned for the role. We saw her on the first day, and in my 25 or so years of being in this business, it was one of the greatest auditions I ever saw. And then it was the unenviable task of calling NBC up and saying, hey, so the lead of your show next to Jimmy Smith, we'd like it to be someone no one's ever heard of before. But for us, I just think she's one of the most spectacular actors I've ever worked with. And it's the character she plays is not an easy character to pull off because, you know, she's a fiery, tough, strong woman. You know, she's in the Murphy Brown mold. And you know, it takes an actress with a certain sensitivity and, you know, her background is comedy, so she can improv. Really, to make a character like that someone you root for, and I think she does an incredible job of that. And you know, and when you see them together, you believe they have 30 years of history, Jimmy and Caitlin. They just naturally they had it from day one. We were very fortunate that way.
The program we're talking about is Bluff City Law. It's one of NBC's new fall series that premieres this Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on your local NBC station. And we are speaking with Dean Joris, and he is the creator and executive producer of the program. By the way, the program also involves David Gianniari, the wonderful producer of him from 6 Feet Under. He's also done executive work as well. We'll talk about that in a second. And Dean joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Simon Appleton with you live from New Webby York. And if you have a question or a comment or remaining moments with Dean, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up on Thursday, we have a very special episode. For the first time in several years, we're going on the road. We're going to be coming your way from the New York City Media Lab Annual Summit in downtown Brooklyn, J Street to be exact. And we will have among our guests some of the people who will be speaking there, including Joshua Ness. He's one of the key people of Verizon Media's 5G labs. If you think 5G is just a transmission system for your smartphone, wait till you hear what could happen for television. We'll have him. We'll have other people who will be there as well. And it'll all be live from downtown Brooklyn that next Thursday at a special time, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. It's 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Our special Tomorrow Televised episode live from the New York City's annual Media Lab Summit, right here exclusively on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. You were mentioning a plot line dealing with religious freedom, and when you said that, Dean, I thought immediately Inherit the Wind, because it was we played earlier this week on Turner Classic Movies, one of my favorite movies of its kind, and I was wondering if that was inspiration.
You know, that's, I mean, I'll put it this way. That's one of the inspirations for this show, right? That, To Kill a Mockingbird, you know, these all of sort of the classic great legal stories are inspirations for this. And I think it's because, you know, it's, if we think of what dramas seem to historically work on television, I mean, people come back to over and over again in variations, like, it, you know, police, medical, and legal, and, you know, and all of them sort of deal with the big issues of life and death and right and wrong. And, you know, in legal, you don't necessarily have people dying, but you do get to ask questions that the other shows don't necessarily get to ask, you know, like how do you feel about a particular issue? And where do we draw the line? Where do we draw the line as a people? Where do we draw the line as individuals?
What's it like working with David Gianniari, someone who has had a tremendous track record in television, both as a producer of series, but also in the executive ranks?
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's a real pleasure because he's just one of the nicest people you ever meet. And then he has this tremendous wealth of experience, as you said, as a producer and as an executive. So, you know, everything that goes into a TV show that people don't see, whether it be casting, whether it be developing the scripts, whether it be dealing with marketing, whether it be, you know, putting out crazy little fires, David's done it all, and he knows how to do it. He knows how to do it with charm and aplomb. And, you know, I think 6 Feet Under, to me, ranks as one of the all-time great television series, and you know, was also had a dysfunctional family at its core. So he's just incredibly well-versed in this kind of show, and, you know, just the perfect partner for Michael and I.
Also one of the great TV endings of all time. That last few minutes of that last episode, incredible.
I think probably, I'm not sure, I think it's the top one for me. Because in hindsight, it's so obvious that it should end that way. But I didn't see it coming. And then, of course, the perfect music cue with Sia. I remember as it moved through time and showed us the various endings, I was devastated. that was up there with Bobby Simone dying on NYPD Blue. You've hit two of the more emotional experiences I've had as a television viewer.
Also, one of the great opening titles of a TV series and wonderful theme music by Thomas Newman. One of the few great composers that still has not won an Oscar for his work, and the track record that man has had, not to mention the family that he's part of, is just tremendous. And by the way, this is the 25th anniversary of The Shawshank Redemption, one of his great scores. Just an incredible human being.
Is it the 25th? Is that much time? I remember when Shawshank Redemption was what we call a spec script in Hollywood, basically. It was Rita Hayworth and The Shawshank Redemption. Seems like just yesterday.
Not true. This is turning out to be a very big broadcast television season for you, Dean, because you have another series that's going to be coming out top of 2020.
Yeah, and it's a completely different kind of show. It's called the Baker and the Beauty, and it's based on an Israeli format, which essentially what it tries to do is bring what I guess we would call classic romantic comedy storytelling for movies. So I think Notting Hill is the easiest example, because I think the show sort of, the DNA feels like the DNA of Notting Hill, and bring it to, you know, a weekly TV series. In this case, it's just about an everyman, a baker, Cuban immigrant family, and over the course of a night in Miami, his world collides with that of one of the most famous and beautiful women in the world, and then the series will follow what happens when they try to have a relationship, how it changes him, and how it changes his family. And it's, you know, for me, it's fun because it's a very different kind of writing. So I get to bounce back and forth between, you know, heavy dramatic scenes and or emotional scenes, and to then, you know, sort of more lighthearted scenes that feel a little bit more like My Big Fat Greek Wedding.
Jimmy Smith, Kayla McGee, great cast, and it all happens with NBC's new legal drama from Memphis, Tennessee. It's called Bluff City Law, and it premieres this coming Monday night, 10 p.m. Pacific time. Check your local listings for the NBC station in your area. For more details about the program online, it's NBC.com. It's NBC.com for Bluff City Law, this coming Monday night, the premiere, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific time. Gene, George Harris, thank you so much for coming aboard. Good luck to you and Jimmy and Kayla and everybody involved in making the show, hopefully the beginning on Monday night of a great, great run. And let's have you back to talk about the show coming up top of 2020. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, Simon. Appreciate it. Anytime.
You're very welcome, Dean. Have a super weekend. Take care.
Take care.
Dean Giordanis joining us live from Los Angeles on Tomorrow Be Televised. More of our program coming your way, including our classic trivia question of the week and our second guest for the next half hour. But first, some words from the fine folks at Audible.com. If you're looking for something aspirational and empowering, as Dean was saying, try this audiobook, Girls Stop Apologizing by Rachel Hollis. I have a hunch you will really enjoy it. And it could be one of the three free audiobooks that you can get right now through a trial run of Audible.com. You know, Audible.com is the leading provider of spoken digital audio entertainment, information, and certainly aspiration and inspiration. Over 180,000 titles to choose from, including the growing catalog of Audible Originals. It's everything from the best of Broadway, off-Broadway regional theater, one-woman, one-man shows, and original productions made for Audible Originals. And you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you're hearing us on right now at Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, iHeartRadio. Just sign up at audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. Get three free audiobooks, two of them Audible Originals, 1 month trial, and great customer service from Audible's parent, Amazon.com. To get all of that, just get your person going to audibletrial.com/televised. Sign in, and then hear for yourself how audible.com can transform the way you hear the world. Now it's time for our classic trivia question of the week, and we've been running it for the last week and a half. And if you are the first with the correct answer, you can get the wonderful upcoming book, The 3-Minute Rule. Say less to get more from any pitch or presentation by recent TWBT guest Brant Kindivic. Here's the question. Very simple. Name the Brady Bunch's pet. Name the Brady Bunch's pet. We're looking for both the name and the type of pet on that iconic series, which is now the subject of the very Brady renovation. It's doing very well Monday nights on Home and Garden Television. All you have to do to win is email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your full name address. And if you are first with the correct answer, you will win the 3-minute rule. If you missed the question a moment ago, no problem. We'll post it tomorrow and throughout the weekend if need be on our homepage, on Facebook and on Twitter at UBCSimonTWBT. So remember, if you don't have the question now, we will post it on Facebook and Twitter tomorrow. And the Twitter handle, by the way, is UBCSimonTWBT. That's UBCSimonTWBT. But remember, in order to win, you got to be in. So get involved. Put yourself in the game now. And all the very best. When we come back, one of the most prolific people in the world of game and competition show directors will join us, Ivan Lisinski. And when he's not doing that, He's cooking up some very interesting services. One about sneaker culture, the other about wine, that could become part of your smart TV set or device viewing very, very soon. He'll join us live on the road after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradioandspeaker.com. Together, they serve more than 35 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Coming up at 6 o'clock Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, it's Sports Time Radio. Get yourself a good view of what's coming up in sports this weekend, the Major League Baseball pennant races, WNBA playoffs, and, of course, what's coming up in week number 3 of the National Football League and week 4 of college football. All covered on Sports Time Radio today, 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio and Spreaker. Remember, the best of VTR and Spreaker comes your way 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of Tomorrow Be Televised, coming your way on this Friday afternoon live from New York here on Blog Talk Radio and Speaker, also on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network. Starting out with you live from the Big Apple, 76 degrees at the top of the hour. Got another great guest coming your way in the half hour ahead. We invite you to be part of the program. All it takes, a phone call from you. So ring it in, 646-652-2906. It's 646-652-2906. Or join our chat room, Simon Apple 041. We've got a bunch of people in the room already, and we would love to hear from you. My next guest is one of the most prolific people when it comes to the world of directing game shows or competition shows. His credits include the Teen Choice Awards on Fox, To Tell the Truth on ABC, and two big winners on NBC, Hollywood Game Night with Jane Lynch, and this year's big summer hit, Songland, which has just been renewed for a second season. But that's not all this person is doing, as you'll soon find out. Joining us live on the road, Ivan Didinsky. Hello, Ivan.
Hey, Simon. Happy Friday. How are you?
Very, very well, thank you. We should point out that you are with your partner in life, Audrey Morrissey, the executive producer of The Voice, who was on this program about a year, year and a half ago. So it's great to have you aboard. And let's say, and hi, Audrey, if you can hear us.
Hi, Simon. Thank you.
You're welcome. Ivan, first of all, your thoughts about Songland. You directed the show, got a second season. What was it like putting it together?
I did. It was an incredible project for us to work on artistically. Working with so many incredible musicians and the talented producing panel on the show was just, the best part of the show was that we were able to give songwriters, young up-and-coming songwriters, an opportunity that they would never get otherwise, which is essentially to get their foot in the door and present their unique songs to an incredible group of producers and then transform those songs for a guest recording artist on the show. Everybody from, John Legend and Will.i.am to Kelsey Ballerini and Leona Lewis. I mean, those are huge artists. And that opportunity was probably the most exciting and fulfilling part of the first season of Songland.
And you and your crew, Ivan, were really able to give the viewers a wonderful taste of what it's like to be a songwriter, whether you write behind the scenes or you sing the songs you do for a living. It was at times very poignant, at times very illuminating. And a lot of that was due to your direction and the way you worked with the crew.
Yeah, I have a really tight crew. We've been shooting music for a lot of years together. The cameramen that work on my show and the lighting designers and the production designers and the producers, we've been working together for the better part of 10 years on and off in music and variety and game and reality shows and competition shows. And for us to come together on Songland was sort of the culmination of all those years of preparation, shooting thousands and thousands of hours of concerts for CMT and MTV and the award shows, and then being able to translate that into a very small, intimate space that Songland and the studio is, to really be able to focus on the heart and the stories of these songwriters. When they walk in that door and they're, 5 to 10 feet away from these huge artists, it really changes their lives. We were able to change people's lives through the art of songwriting and music and performance. And it was an interesting process that they would come in with these raw songs and pitch them. And then really, in the moment, some of the best moments in the show for us were the immediate transformation of those songs by our producers. Shane McAnally, the wordsmith and the word wizard, Esther Dean with her incredible lyricism and music production. And Ryan, who is a savant, I mean, the what he can do with a song in the moment, Ryan Tedder, you know, what he can do in the moment with a song is just outrageous. And what always surprised Audrey and I and a lot of the team was we would, you know, we were betting on the show. When the songwriters would come in, we would say to ourselves, like, which songs do you think they're going to pick? And inevitably, a lot of times we were wrong because we couldn't necessarily hear what they were hearing. And that was some of the most fun, was to be sitting in the control room and in the truck with the team from NBC, the producing team, and saying, like, what songs do you think are going to move through to the next round? And a lot of times we were wrong because we just couldn't hear what those producers heard, whether it was a hook or a melody or a lyric or a line or whatever it was. We just, you know, they hear things in those songs when those songwriters come out that we don't necessarily hear, and it was always a surprise for us on every single episode that we filmed.
Mm-hmm. If there's a connection among all these shows you have done in recent years with your career, Ivan, it's probably the fact you've worked with a whole variety of celebrities, whether it's Andy Anderson on To Tell the Truth, Craig Ferguson for 3 years on Celebrity Name Game, which you won two of those years, you won the Emmy for Best Game Show Host, Hollywood Game Night with Jane Lynch, all the musical stars on Songland. Have you developed sort of a guide to how you deal with celebrities, no matter where they come from, or when you direct programs?
You know, it's really funny. I try to find the common connection with them, and whatever that is. You know, with Anthony Anderson, we talk about sneakers a lot. With Jane Lynch, we talk about music and musicals and dance and performance. I have a dance background. I was a dancer and a choreographer. I was on a TV show called Roundhouse in the early 90s on Nickelodeon, and I was in the film Newsies for Disney. And you know, I try to find the common thread with the talent. When I worked with Sean Combs, Puff Daddy at Revolt, I was the creative director there for his network Revolt, and that relationship was based off of our love and passion for hip hop music and art. You know, we built a relationship off of art. I'm a big art collector, and Diddy collects art as well, and we had a common thread with everything that we wanted to create for that network. It was all about, you know, let's start with art. If we make programming that starts with art, we're gonna have success. And the same thing with Ferguson. Ferguson is one of the wittiest, funniest guys I know. And I really enjoyed Celebrity Name Game with him. And I think even with the new shows that I'm working on, I also direct, you know, Martha and Snoop's Potluck Dinner. You know, with Martha, it was a connection about design and architecture and aesthetics. And with Snoop, you know, it was music and hip-hop culture. You know, I was there in the early days of hip-hop. You know, I was on a crew, and I grew up listening to Sugar Hill Gang records. And that was, you know, that was my early days of hip-hop and street culture. So it was always just sort of finding the common thread and never really, you know, I never really... It's not necessary to me. You know, they're just like us. It's not celebrity. They're great. You know, these are super talented people. And if I could just find that common thread to bring us all down to ground level, we always had great relationships with all the talent that I've worked with.
We're speaking with Ivan Dinsky. He is one of the most popular and prolific game show competition show directors around, currently doing To Tell the Truth on ABC, just came off Songland, the critically acclaimed summer series on NBC, just got renewed for a second season. You can also find his work on Hollywood Game Night with Jane Lynch, also on NBC. And later in the half hour, we'll talk about a special project he and his partner in life, Audrey, is involved with that may bring some new clothing services to your smart TV set or smart device. Ivan joins us on the road this half hour on Tomorrow We Televised. Simon Applebaum with you live from New York. 73 at the top of the hour. You have a question or comment for Ivan. Make the call now, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple048. Remember, we've got three episodes coming your way, Monday, Thursday, and Friday of next week. On Monday's program, one of the most popular and long-running shows on public television, American Health Journal, just became a new 24/7 smart TV device service on Roku this past week. And we'll have Ron Perez, he's the executive director of the company that makes that program and the service. He'll be with us as our lead guest That's all coming up Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And once again, coming on Friday, among our guests, the general manager of BET Plus, Devin Griffith, whose service premiered yesterday, with, among other things, two original series, The First Wives Club, with Tracy Oliver as executive producer and creator, and also a new series from Will Packer as well. So, Devin Griffin, BET Plus, live with us, exclusive, next Friday, right here on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. I mean, I got to ask for a roundhouse. I was a big fan of that show. What was it like doing that series for Nickelodeon for several years?
Yeah, that was a great time. You know, early 90s, we started the show in Orlando. It moved to L.A. We did 54 episodes of that show. We worked with incredibly funny writers. You know, the show, Benny Hester and Rita Sheffield and Buddy Sheffield, who came from the Saturday Night Live crew. That was an amazing time. I think it was a little bit ahead of its time. We were doing, you know, basically Saturday Night Live for kids, and it was interesting. When I work in television now as a director, it's all based on teleprompters and everyone reading off a prompter. But back in the day when we were doing Roundhouse, we had to memorize those scripts, and we basically filmed that show as live. So when we did an episode of Roundhouse that was an hour, it was an hour straight of shooting, and we had live audiences there, and everybody memorized their lines. It was an incredible show to turn around in a week. Every week we wrote original songs. We created three or four original dance pieces, and the show flow was so fluid because of the direction. And one of the, you know, I pay massive credit to Bruce Gowers, who was, you know, one of my mentors, and he taught me a lot about what I know in the directing world. And I look at the time that I spent on camera being directed by both Bruce and Rita and Gary Halverson and some of the other directors that came through that show. I just learned so much from them being behind the camera that the minute I got off camera, I was able to jump into the edit bay, hang out with the camera guys, look at their notes, and I learned so much about the process then, knowing that I wasn't necessarily my passion to be in front of the camera. It was definitely taking all of the different professional fields that I had worked in, whether it was choreography, whether it was studying cinematography, whether it was the photography and the acting, and applying that to being a director in, you know, for the shows that I work on now. So Roundhouse is a great, I still stay in touch with a lot of the cast and the crew, and it's fun to work with some of the camera guys today and direct them. You know, they come onto the set and they're like, oh, I was a camera assistant on Roundhouse, you know, at CBS. It's interesting to go back. I had this really great moment when I was directing Martha and Snoop this season. We were filming at CBS Radford, and I drove onto the lot, and I used to remember, like, driving onto the lot in the 90s in my little, you know, Volkswagen Rabbit convertible, and I would see Jerry Seinfeld cruising in his, you know, Porsches, and I was like, oh, someday, hopefully I'll come back to this, you know, lot and, you know, drive a cool car like Jerry and get to direct shows, and I, you know, I'm living that dream right now. So it's really exciting to kind of come full circle and be back in the directing chair, you know, hopefully fostering some young talent and inspiring people with the vision that I try to bring to these sets and projects and productions that I'm.
Yeah. I mean, how long did it take for you to evolve from being performer in front of the camera to director behind the camera? And so the fact that your experience on Roundhouse and the fact you have some really super directors, like Bruce Gowers, really super directing work on variety show television for years, Gary Halverson, both comedy and variety. How long did the process take for you to go from one part of the field to the other?
I had an interesting transition between acting and directing, which was editing. And it was probably the most educational process, where I was editing. I had been hired to produce and edit at MTV, and I was doing a show called Biorhythm. It was sort of a new format, sort of a faster paced, more edgy, stylized, artistic version of Behind the Music. And through producing and editing that show, I learned about what, and immediately following that show, I worked on a project with Audrey, actually, which is where we met, called FarmClub.com with Jimmy Iovine and Doug Morris. And learning the editing process while working on Farm Club and seeing how multi-camera directing worked, because I studied single camera directing. I studied cinematography and photography at both Art Center, College of Design, and UCLA. And the process of multi-camera directing was really intriguing to me. So what I was doing was I was basically taking all of those ISOs and the isolated cameras and editing those cameras and cutting those performances for the show. So my background didn't come up through script. I didn't get to the directing chair through the script department and ADing. I actually came up through editing, which was a really interesting way to come up through that because I knew what was needed in post and I knew what was missing in post on those shows that I had edited. So I was able to correct for that while directing. So that was my transition. And my transition was really producing and editing in 94, 95, 96. And then I transitioned into directing in around 2000. And my first job was an MTV music show called the MTV Music Shortlist. And it was an amazing concert. And I got a great break to direct the show. And I basically, what was great about that opportunity was I brought in a lot of the single camera shooters into the world of multi-cameras. Audrey connected me with a lot of her old crew from multi-cameras. So it was this great blend of artistic filmmaking, single camera cinematographers, and traditional multi-camera show cameramen working together on this project. And it was really in my mind, I still look back at this specific performance with Interpol that I directed, and it's still one of my favorite performances that I've ever directed. And I still work with all of those same people 15 years later. They're all still on my crew.
Going back to your show with Martha and Snoop Dogg, do you find it amazing that Snoop Dogg himself has made the transition to being a game show host? I don't know if you've seen his work on the revived Joker's Wild, but he just comes across like owning that show like no tomorrow.
Yeah, Snoop's an amazing character, has an amazing focus. When he gets on set, he's there to work and do his job, and he's really good. Basically, I get to prep him in the morning, take him through the show, talk about all the skits and bits that are happening, get any input from him, and he is focused. He comes out, he turns it on, he gets the job done. He and Martha have an amazing relationship. They're so funny. He's so he's definitely inspired and enamored with Martha and loves her whole vibe. He's an amazing artist, both from a music standpoint, but from that game show standpoint, he knows the drill. He can come out and knock out a game show in real time, and he's a fantastic host.
Let's talk briefly about Celebrity Name Game. I was a big fan of the show. I love Craig Ferguson. I still think his run as host of the Late Late Show was one of the best late night runs ever. The man is hysterically funny. And I had a chance to meet him directly here when he was here in New York before the first season. He's also very tall. I mean, you've got to look up to that man. You really do. I'm not kidding. But what was my impression with Craig? He just came across so affable, and I think made the transition to game show host beautifully.
One of the funniest guys I've ever worked with. One of the quickest guys I've ever worked with. And also, I'll tell you, Scott St. John was the showrunner on that, and I really enjoyed working with him and collaborating with him. And the things about Craig that are amazing on that show for me were, we would, after season one, we would come back. That was a strip show. We shot 120 episodes in 4 weeks. And Craig would come in. Craig and I would arrive at the stage about the same time. We would start filming at about 11:30. We would both arrive at about 11:25. I had the show memorized. He had the show memorized. Between season one and season two, when most show hosts or game show hosts have to come back in, warm up, refresh themselves with the format, it was like a light switch. We both showed up at 11:25, walked on the set at 11:30, and we shot that show in real time. By 12:05, we were done filming that show, and he picked it up, second season, third season, fourth season, straight away, right back into it, with no rehearsals, lock solid. The one thing I will tell you, though, is the cameraman, you would show up to a Craig Ferguson set, and they would show up, the camera guys would come in, and they would all be dressed in parkas, like ski parkas, literally North Face, 300 down, 300 down ski parkas, because Craig wants the set at 64 degrees or 56 degrees. I can't remember exactly the temperature, but if it dipped to 60, if it was 65 and it dipped to 66 or 67, he would call us out and he would say, I'm not coming back after lunch unless the temperature is 65 degrees. Cause I can't, I need to be fresh and fast, and any form of heat will slow me down. And that's why he stays so sharp and so witty and just so clever. He's so funny. Such a great guy.
And he is. And by the way, he's got a brand new series that's coming out on Comedy Dynamics. That is coming out, I think, next month, based on a stand-up tour. I've seen some clips of it. It's really, really fun. I think it's called Hobo Unlimited,
yeah.
And it will be coming out, as I said, next month on Comedy Dynamics. So check it out. If you've ever seen Craig on tour in his stand-up work, he is just as quick and funny and amazing as ever. Ivan, let's talk about the projects that you and Audrey are doing together. You have your own production company, and you're working on a pair of programming services that could show up on smart TV sets and smart devices. Tell us about them, and how close are we to seeing them?
Sure. Well, after I left Revolt, and basically, you know, Revolt was a really interesting learning process for me, which was starting a television cable channel from scratch. You know, Andy Schoen, a really long-time collaborator and partner of mine, creative partner, hired me to be the creative director there, and you know, it was trying. We spent a year and a half building the website and the social media platform and creating 3,000 interstitials for the brand, working on the voice and the tone and the aesthetic, and then launching from scratch, you know, and it was very, very trying. It was very difficult to do, to launch a network from scratch. We weren't taking over another channel. We weren't refreshing another brand. We were literally starting from black, TV black, and turning on the switch on a specific day in October and going live to see what would happen. And that process taught me, you know, everything I needed to know about launching a network. So when I, after Revolt, I was looking for new opportunities in this, obviously this interesting changing landscape of television, of, you know, this digital world of short form content and media. It really intrigued me, coming from MTV, creating high quality, low cost programming and everything from Revolt and working in the commercial space. I wanted to create our own brands. I was sort of saying to myself, God, I've helped all of these networks over the years create their brands and elevate their identities. What if we launched our own channel on one of these OTT platforms or created our own? So we started looking at interesting hyper-enthusiast spaces, you know, areas where audiences and fans were super fans that were not necessarily mainstream, but, you know, coming up in a wave of popularity. And we identified, I said, if I could start, there was three channels that would be amazing to start. One would be like everything about I.
Mm-hmm. Are you there? I think we may have temporarily lost Ivan from him being on the road. But I will say that the channels he's working on, one is called SNKR Inc., which is on sneaker culture, and the other is Summer Media, which is an interactive service that will involve the wine arena, including the opportunity to buy wine. And unfortunately, Ivan has dropped out. I have a hunch it's because of the smartphone situation being on the road. So in case we can't get him back again, I want to thank Ivan for coming on. Ivan Adinsky, by the way, if you want to get in touch with Ivan, check him out. You can go to Instagram, www.instagram.com/Ivansky70.com. That's www.instagram.com/Ivansky70/. And again, he's on Instagram, and we hope to have him back on the show when both of these ventures, Sneaker Inc. and Seller Media, come on. Of course, I have a hunch he is back. Let's see. Let's get him on. Ivan, are you back?
I'm back. Sorry about that. I'm driving through the grapevine right now, headed up to Paso Robles. So the signal may get dodgy. I apologize.
No problem. We have a few seconds left, and I just wanted to get your thoughts with Emmy Awards coming up on Sunday night. Any shows you're pulling for?
The Voice. What are you talking about? Of course. I've got a book with my wife and a team at The Voice and a collaborator, Mark Burnett, and the whole team over at NBC. I'm pulling for my home team.
I totally got that. Ivan, it's been a wonderful pleasure to have you on, a little bit from Audrey as well. All the very best. As soon as your services get on the air or get ready to go on the air, we would love to have you back. It's been a delightful half hour being with you.
Sounds great, Simon. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Thanks so much.
You too. Audrey, take care. You too. Hope you have a wonderful trip wherever you're going and a super weekend. Ivan Nadinsky and a little bit of Audrey Marcy, too, joining us live on the road to Paso Robles. That's where they were going, and they will get there, I'm sure, in great, great shape. We have a few moments left, so let me give you very quickly my thoughts for the major Emmy categories in programming coming up. The Emmy Awards are on Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. It is live on both coasts on your local Fox station. Very quickly, for Best Comedy, I know a lot of people are playing for Veep. I'm going to go against the grain. I think it's going to be The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. I had a very strong second year. I do think Julie Louis-Dreyfus will be the first person to win an Emmy Award for all 7 seasons of Veep. She couldn't do it last year because of the breast cancer situation, but she was in super shape for Veep this year. Great closing episode. I think she will win for Best Actress, but I think Maisel will win for the Best Comedy Series. So Best Drama, no question. Slam dunk. Game of Thrones deserves it all the way. Best miniseries, I've been going to win. I think that When They See Us, the Abbott miniseries to Netflix, will win on a night where I believe HBO will do very, very well. This could be the major highlight in terms of programming for Netflix. When They See Us is my pick for best miniseries. I don't think it's got a shot in the acting categories. And for best made-for-TV movie, another HBO program, Deadwood the Movie. It will be the Television Academy's big chance to honor for the very last time, probably, in all likelihood, one of the great writer and producers in television history, David Milch, who is certainly what probably is his last years on Earth. And I think it would be great to have him back for being once again in zenith in Deadwood the Movie. So that's my choices again. Best Comedy, Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Best Drama, Game of Thrones. Best Made-for-TV Movie, Deadwood the Movie. And Best Miniseries, When They See Us, on Netflix. Emmy Awards take place this Sunday night. That's September 22nd, live from Los Angeles, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, and I think we'll be playing the West Coast at the 8 p.m. Eastern West Coast time as well on your local Fox station. More details online, go to www.emmys.com and www.fox.com. Want to thank both of our guests for being with us today and all of you for tuning in. Don't forget, back on Monday, first of 3 episodes, with Roman Perez, the executive director of the new American Health Journal channel, now available on Roku, and will be on other smart TV sets and smart devices in the months ahead. If you came in late on today's episode, want to catch up on an episode you missed, go to the homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out our podcast over the weekend, available anytime on iTunes, Apple TV, Speaker Podcast app, and of course, the IR Radio Podcast Network. And we'd love to hear what you thought about today's program. Here's us with the Emmy Awards, too, and the future of TV. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. Find me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter at UBCSimonTWT. We respond because what you say matters. The views expressed in this program are those of the participants, not those of the Blog Talk Radio Speaker, and iHeartRadio. Tomorrow we televise is brought today by Audible.com and Amazon Company. Remember, Audible transforms the way you hear the world. For 3 free audiobooks, 1 month trial, audibletrial.com/televised. For Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening. Have a fantastic weekend. We are back on Monday, first of 3 episodes for next week, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio Speaker, and the IR Radio Podcast Network. Remember, whatever you're up to today, please make it safe. That goes to the weekend, too, and make it great. Until next time, stay well and stay tuned.